Warning! This program contains strong adult language, violence, and brief nudity. It's everything you're looking for. Live from the Sims Tower in the Robinson Auto Group studio, we are AM 1600 WKKX.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Wow, That's Loud. Welcome to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600, WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It is 40 degrees outside. It's warm enough. I like it. There's not snow.
It's going to be almost 50 this. I don't care if it rains, as long as it's warm. It's all that matters to me.
We're going to Myrtle Beach here in a few weeks. I can't wait. It was like 60 degrees there the other day.
Aww.
Right?
I get to meet his family for the first time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nervous. His family, they're great people. Don't be nervous.
I'm excited.
You're a sweetie.
Aw,
right?
Yeah, they're not going to, there's not going to be any.
I won the lottery here, Lo.
You outkicked your coverage, as John would say.
I'm Jordan Klein. She's Lola Miller. Also, Sarah Howard is with us. Are you going to?
I'll talk.
Okay.
She already did.
I know, but usually she just says like one word things. Give us a call, 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, call us toll free, 1-866-514-1600. Our guest today. Okay. Our guest today, Mr. Kurt Kessler. He is the writer of Demonology 101, an overview to the spirits and how to summon and banish them. Kurt, you with us?
Yeah, how you doing there?
Hey, we were talking before the show a little bit, and I didn't tell Lola this, but one of the guests that we have on all the time.
Oh, Claude.
Yeah, Dwayne Claude.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not personal with him, but I do know of his work. I own a few of his books, and I agree with a lot of things he says. So, however, though, I do have my own twisted methods, if you will.
Everybody's got their own little
twisted methods,
twists and sparks that they like to do. Tell us about your book. I think it's got a title: An Overview to the Spirits and How to Summon and Banish Them. What is your book teaching us to do?
Well, you see, that's just it. A lot of people do hear the title and they automatically freak out because they hear, wait a minute, summon. Why would I want to summon a demon?
Right.
The reality is that it's not up to me to actually answer that question for a person if they'd want to do that.
I'm just going to tell you how.
Well, no, actually, and that's another key trick. In a lot of the proper banishment levels and rituals that can be gone through, I do give recognition to some of the early Judeo and Christian methods in terms of banishment. However, though, there are other banishment of what can be considered a demonic spirit that have existed even from the Samaritan times. And the reality is that under certain aspects, if you will, some can be automatically twisted into a conjuring ritual versus a banishment.
Huh.
So I guess the best way of explaining it to people is that when it comes to actual conjuring, I show them where the lock is. I don't tell them how to get the key, and let alone how to actually unlock the lock with the key. But I do tell them where the lock is. So that's probably the best metaphor that I've been even told by others who have read that book, sat there and said that's the best way of explaining the whole summoning aspect. Reality is obviously we don't want these creatures running around,
Of course.
And at the same time, I had to be honest with people because I did not want them to purchase the book, and because they may have a problem at home and they try to perform their own cleansing, if you will, and come to find out, no, they did one thing slightly wrong. And next thing you know, you're overran with these ugly beings, if you will. And I didn't want to have that responsibility, so I sat there and I basically told people, hey, you know, this on certain things, this is not only just a tool for banishment, it can be a tool for conjuring. So just be careful, use common sense.
Now, explain to us a bit of what demonology is, because I guess in my naivety, how do you say that, Lola?
Naivete.
All right.
Well.
I've always thought demonology was like the classification of demons, where angelology would be, or angelology would be the classification of angels. Now, where do you fall into this, and what is it that you do that's different?
Well, demonology, you are right. It is actually pretty much you've got to understand what the classes are, if you will. There are many different tribes that have existed throughout time, and more importantly, there's actual known entities. And look at it this way. There's a reason why the title is Demonology 101, is because I want people to realize you're coming to class on this. You're going to learn who the main baddies are, if you will, or whatever terminology you decide to use on them. Demonology is basically the study of that end of the occult. And I do have to point this out. A lot of people hear the term occult and they automatically say, oh, well, it's a group of people in the woods with robes on, holding candles and chanting. And the reality is no, the occult is not that.
No, you don't do that? Well, I guess that's it for this. No, I'm joking.
Well, no, the occult is actually the study, if you will, of the ancient practices of any and all religions. A lot of people are dumbfounded when they hear that, oh, yeah, there were animal sacrifices in early Christianity. And it's true. There actually were. It's studying these early archaic rituals. You've got to be borderline historian. You've got to be borderline archaeologist. And more importantly, you've got to be willing to just go ahead and just accept the way that religions grew on this planet. And that is probably the best way of explaining what a demonology is. You've got to actually be willing to try to understand, and more importantly, study your butt off. I mean, I look at it this way. I've been involved in the paranormal for over 20 years.
Wow.
I've been doing demonology. The first case that I ever was involved with would actually push me forward, if you will, into demonology was about 15 years ago. And since then, I have been learning stuff every day. I learned something new every day. I assure you that.
Now, with your book, you studied your butt off. You wrote this book. Do you do much like actual cases? Like,
yes, I do. You got to remember, I have actually, you know, like I said, I started studying the paranormal. I focus primarily on hauntings and all that, but I like we discussed earlier, you know, I'd gone over everything. And what happens is a lot of times I'll get contacted either from a paranormal group, or I will get contacted directly from, you know, what will end up being a client. And we do play a little bit of what I call the setup game. And the setup game for me, I won't lie, I'm going to ask them specific questions. And depending on their answers, it's going to tell me whether or not it's a hoax. A lot of people from TAPS, I don't know if you have any of their listeners part of the TAPS family and all that, but TAPS family usually refers to them as the Nevermind file. And I have them, and me and a few others, we came up with the term, they're called pancake flippers, because what it is they come up, you pour the batter on the griddle, and they're getting their eyes watered and glazed over. You flip the pancake, and the second you when the term of flipping the pancake means you ask them the general questions that you're going to ask anyway of everyone, And depending on their answers, it means whether or not that they're going to wait for another pancake. In other words, they're actually going to be a long-haul case, and they've got something true, or they're just going to pick up their pancake, walk back to their table, and try to ignore you. Basically, in other words, never come back and talk to you. And there unfortunately is a lot more of those cases than there are actual long-haul cases. One of the goofiest things about demonology, if you will, from the aspect of being a paranormal investigator, is you've got, if you take a case study of about 200 cases, 200 true paranormal event cases, you've got maybe one out of that 200 in which you are, on average, that you're dealing with a demon. All right. Contrary to what some TV programs will try to stress to people, no, demons are everywhere, but they're not everywhere toying with somebody at the same time. These cases are far and few between, and it's only because, you know, you're talking about beings that they have this mindset, if you will. You ever hear the expression on the back burner?
Yes.
Okay, well, look at a demon's mind kind of like looking at a stove with one front burner and about a million back burners. And the way demons operate is not uncommon for them to pick one of the pots on the back burners, bring it up front, stir it real quick, drop it to the back, grab another pot, stir it real quick. And the way these creatures happen is that people will sit there and they think that they're automatically being tormented left and right. And the reality is no, a demonic entity, if you will, may be inside your home for 5 seconds, but it's just enough to go ahead, do what it wants to do to start pushing you. And depending on how you react will determine whether or not this entity is going to actually truly want to stick around and keep messing with you, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, except for the cooking analogy, because I don't actually cook, but I get it. Yeah, and then if you overreact to it, then it sees this.
Kind of like a bully.
Yeah.
When you react.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. That is the biggest thing to always bear in mind, and that's the reason why whenever you are actually in a situation that is demonic, you if you're a man, you got to get ready to drop a pair. If you're a woman, you've got to be chest up, because go in there and just face it. You know, they're bullies, and the second you bully back, oh yeah, you want to talk about this, you know, creature that seems scary to everyone? I mean. Yeah, you might have some incidences. I don't want to lead people on. You might have some incidents. I personally have a scar on my left eyebrow because I have had a very nice, heavy glass ashtray thrown 20 feet across the room and smacked me dead in the face. They are rude. I can't lie there. But I guarantee you'll get more you'll get more bang for your buck if you stand off and just face them. It's the, you know, the old expression, you know, face your personal demons. It's not just a metaphor. It's a literal interpretation if you do this. And unfortunately, that's something that I actually have to do on a regular basis, is face my demons.
Is it too that because they are a bully, they're not going to expend a whole lot of energy? If they can't make an inroad right away, then why hang here and try and torment somebody if it's not going to get me anything? I'm just going to move on to the next one, because there probably are a whole lot of people that they could torment that would allow them to do it.
Well, very true. And another thing to always bear in mind is that there are demons out there that the best way of explaining this is that they all have their own little quirks. Some demons are, if they're able to achieve something, it doesn't matter how goofy it may sound, and then again, it might even be a little bit serious. There's a demon that's actually known by the name of Shub. And this demon actually, in fact, has a fondness for destroying families. And in many cases, it's actually known that there's actually been, he likes to possess the males, There was actually one documented case as recently as 1998 in which Shub had appeared as the actual male. Why the male was actually somewhere else, but in two different locations, and basically did certain things with another woman in order to spread enough rumors around a town. And it actually is documented. And when I say documented, it's documented as in Shub is entering a hotel room with this female at a certain time, but yet at the very same time on camera, that's where the other male was. Wow. The actual human male. So it was
well documented.
It was just a concept to go ahead and actually destroy a family, and that's what some of these actual demons actually like to do. They like to cause torment amongst humans, and there is ways that they do that.
Wow.
Now, don't get me wrong, though. There's actual demons that, ironically, have a appetite for torment, and sometimes it can be considered actually good. One of the demons by the name of Vera is actually known to torment child molesters. So I know it's going to sound crazy, but it's much like with angelology. Even though there have been angels that have actually done good things, there's angels that have done negative things. And in the term of demonology, yeah, there's demons that do negative things left and right, but there are some that actually do these negative things that have a very general positive outcome, because I look at it this way. If anything was ever, you know, like I have a daughter, if anything happened to her, I might actually take my own book's advice and certain knowledges that I do have and actually go ahead and try to get Vera to go ahead and torment the hell out of the child molester.
Now, what I'm thinking is it's kind of like, okay, in a spiritual way, hell. You know, the bad people go to hell and they're tormented and tortured and that kind of thing, you know. So, I mean, it's kind of their job to go after the baddies, you know, when they're there. So, I mean, I can see where, yeah, it's a demon and, yeah, it's going after the child molester, but they're just getting started, you know.
Right, you know, and it's actually just it's an interesting way of understanding how the mythoses of religions have actually played themselves out, because a lot of people, a lot of people actually like to look at the Bible as the end all as far as, you know, albeit Jewish or Christian religion. The problem is that certain tales, if you will, never actually appeared in the Bible, but we accept them verbatim, such as Lucifer, the long tail of Lucifer getting cast out of heaven. We actually take that story verbatim, even though it's not really it's mentioned in the Bible, but it's not actually gone into in full detail. And if you look at the Bible itself and actually go ahead and go back to earlier versions of the Bible, much before it's been edited, because right now we're looking at it. When you pick up a Bible now, if you go to a hotel room and get the Bible out of the drawer, you're only holding about 60% of what was written. And even then, some speculate that it could be actually as low as 30 to 40% of what was truly written. It's a known fact that 2 years of God time, that's the only way of explaining it, 2 years of God time, Satan was actually tormenting Jehovah in heaven, and he actually changed his name. He actually went by the name, instead of being Lucifer, he actually went by the name of Lucibel. And it's during this 2 year of deity time or whatever that Lucifer actually gained and got his army, you know, the third of the angels and all this, and there were actions that took place. But like I said, it depends on how hard you are into your religion that you're not willing to go ahead and see the big picture. You know, if you're a devout Christian and you hear this and you go, well, that never took place. Lucifer wasn't permitted to be in heaven during that 2 years. You know, fine, so be it. But, you know, guess
well, even
what?
Look There's at Job, the story of Job where, you know, the devil and God are talking about Job together, having a little wager, I guess.
Yep.
You know, so some people just... Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, what you actually have to do is you have to be willing to just bend your mindset a little bit and remember that if God created you and God created me, and technically we're all supposed to be in His image, then guess what? As much as you and I, or whoever, any other human, might socialize, might even interact with each other, well, so do the deities or the demigods. That's part of it, you know. We have a social interaction, and even the spirits, if you will, have a social interaction. The hardest part is to always keep that in mind, especially when you're dealing with this on such a straightforward platform.
Can you tell us about some of your cases?
Change
the names to protect the innocent?
See, that's just it. Now, I do have some cases I can talk about. Ironically, I won't lie. That's actually one of the ways that I also pick out the hoaxers. I have a form that I submit there are certain ways that I go through casework, if you will. People contact me or whatever. And when I'm put in contact with a client, and it's going to be one of those cases where I pay for my own gas in my car and I drive to that location or fly or whatever, I hand them a form. And on that form, it clearly says, you have three choices. You can either give me the choice to tell the world about you and your case. You can give me the choice to go ahead and tell your story, only obviously change the names, protect the innocent, and all that unhappy stuff. And then the third choice, which is, no, you will not tell another living soul for as long as I live. That's ironically how I can actually tell the hoaxers out, because that's the first thing that they check is tell my story to the world. Some of the cases that I've been involved in, let's actually just go with the first 15 years ago. I was involved in a paranormal case.
Uh-huh.
And this is what actually brought me to this level. I had, this goes way back, I was still using a VHS camera, if that means anything. and to a lot of the paranormal investigators who've been around in this, obviously, you know, they hear VHS and they raise their hands and go, oh man, I can't believe that actually took place. But, what had happened was we were investigating a home, and the home had been left to, what was the granddaughter of the previous owner. And, while we were there, we were just going through the ropes because there have been, you know, numerous reports of, like, you know, just mishaps and just things happening around the place. And from down on the first floor, from down the hallway, we heard a bunch of rumbling. And I had noticed that the rumbling was a little bit louder than average, and I actually started walking toward this. Hmm. And I stop and I look back to look back at my group. And I noticed that two of them had actually left the house, and the other ones are back in the other side of the room as I'm headed toward the hallway, because these were just, they were louder than average noises. Well, I coaxed a lady partner, if you will, to go ahead and just follow me down the hall, come with me. You know, I'm still going to go down there, but it's nice to have another person with you. And we walked down the hall and opened the door from where the noises were coming. And it was a bedroom. And every item in the bedroom was completely exactly where it should be, but everything was inverted. The bed looked like it was where it was supposed to be. The dressers looked like they were where they were supposed to be, but everything was turned upside down.
What?
And, I got to have a little bit of fun, I guess. But I'm sitting there, and I honestly did say a few words, mainly, you know, I'll just say what the, and
we get it.
Yeah, and we kind of actually had that, like, both of us had that impression. And actually at that point, you know, we're sitting there saying this, and finally some other people start coming down the hall because they need to see what we're seeing. And at that point, I remember seeing a camera get raised up in my partner's hand, and just as she's raising her hand, That's literally when hell broke loose. Everything in the room started cracking into each other, much like a bumper car.
Wow!
Just imagine all the furniture just going across the floor, everything. And that's when it was basically our cue to back up and leave. We backed down the hallway, and as we did, the door had slammed. No one was near it. It slammed entirely on its own, and we're standing down the hallway, and we're hearing the ruckus again, but then the door opened. And almost the only way to explain it is it opens to the right, and right next to where the door was a couple of these sliding doors, but they collapse in on each other for a wardrobe. Well, we actually saw, you could tell that these doors were being opened, and it was probably the worst case. I'm actually okay normally 9 times out of 10, but there was just something about this entity, full-blown apparition. It looked like a scrawny old man. He walked straight out of the closet, bald, and just you couldn't really see the clothing, but you could just tell it was dark.
So you actually seen the entity?
We actually saw the entity, and then the entity actually just—it stops there. You see it from the side in the doorway, and it turns its head. And as it did, that's when we got us out of the eyes. And that's my only downfall. That's the one thing that always gives me the heebie-jeebies.
All right, tell me about it.
I can handle red glowing eyes.
I
can handle anything, but the second that I see eyes that are not, like, you know,
eyes.
Human,
yeah.
I have a tendency to just go ahead and get creeped out a little bit. And we just heard this low bass come out of its mouth, or at least I did. And I was just like that. And as it did, the door slammed again. And I sat there and I said, okay, well, maybe I will go out to the front porch and actually have a cigarette because I think I need one now. Well,
I guess I should go now.
Yeah. And went out, and we sat there, and we kind of regrouped, and we talked about things, and the owner was there, and the owner said, well, I don't know what to do. And I guess apparently where this house was, if you know Columbus, Ohio, it was down in the Harrison West area, and there's a church with a Catholic church. I name escapes me now, but it actually has a parochial house. Well, sitting there talking over the course of 5 minutes, find out about the parochial house, and we say, well, yeah, it happens to be a 2-minute walk from here. Let's go over and let's at least talk or whatever. Went over there, and I know we ended up disturbing about 4 priests. One was very polite, though, and sat there and just took our request to hear us out. And next thing you know, probably within 20 minutes, maybe a half hour, we're all back at the house. And he's there performing a house cleansing, an exorcism, if you will.
The priest did?
Yeah, the priest did. And that's actually when I sat there, and that was what gave me my push. That's what sat there and said, you know, this isn't the only time, I'm sure, demonic soul, demonic spirit. I was still kind of uneducated at the time. I sat there and I said, you know, if this is, can't be the only time, you know. And of course, I love Ed Warren. I read a lot of his work, you know, and all that. And I sat there and I said, well, you know, maybe this would be a good route for me to go ahead and pursue, because you know, there isn't too many demonologists out there. And I sat there, and I did. I kind of used that as my focus point to go ahead and push forward, because I noticed one thing in that situation, which, don't be wrong, if you're a paranormal investigator, yeah, you hear loud noises like that. You shouldn't be backing yourself toward the door, if not actually stepping outside. But I had noticed that in the initial part of it, here I was, I'm like, I'm eager to try. I'm eager to find out. I needed answers.
Here's the difference, though. Usually in paranormal investigations, when you hear a noise, it's a creak in the house or a banging pipe. It's not an old man in a closet groaning with red eyes.
Right, and let alone all that furniture getting, you know, shoved and all that, and making very loud rackets, I sat there, I noticed that here it was, instead of backing up, I'm actually approaching it. I'm trying to go face forward and find out what's going on. And I sat there and I said, well, you know, maybe that's a good sign, and maybe, you know, I was young and I was actually kind of naive on the subject, because I sat there and I said, if this is what demonology is all about, and I find myself stepping up to the plate, maybe this is the route I should go. And that was the worst mistake I ever made.
Should have went and had that cigarette.
Now, here's my question now, because we have a question, and I'm going to take it a little bit farther, and to what a demon is, because I know different religions, different, I guess different outlooks are different, you know, because we talked about the fallen angels, you know, things like that. The question is, do demons have souls? And that goes into what are they? Because I know you mentioned the spirit or entity.
Well, now comes a real trick. This is the reason why I tell people that they have to be willing to step back from their religion and just look at everything as a whole.
Okay.
If you can stop, and if you can hypothetically say that it doesn't matter if a deity created the planet, it doesn't matter which deity, more importantly, created the planet. If I can sit there and I can say that mankind first spoke about these deities, and like I said, you can pick one, first spoke about these deities and described them and told another about that deity, we in turn have sat there and given shape, if you will, to a concept that, if you boil it down, is just energy. And you have to remember, now comes the part I know a lot of people who are creationists don't like. If you, and even then you can sit there and say, fine, a deity waved his hand and we had the Big Bang. But when the Big Bang happened, minerals and all this stuff went out throughout the universe, but more importantly, so did energy. And energy cannot be destroyed. And we know that because of science that we have positive energy and we have negative energy. We have a very finite amount of neutral energy. And if we sit there and we say, you go back, you know, thousands of years ago to Egypt, you have a couple of slaves and they're sitting there saying, you know, I'm sure there's a deity that would be better than these pagan deities, this poor old deities that our slave owners hold, and this deity will guide us because I have these thoughts. And you could look at that person and say, well, that person was a prophet, and that's fine. But he sat there and he described this deity. And just imagine that maybe in some way a bunch of positive energy that was floating around the universe started to take shape. And as the humans described that deity more and more, that energy charge drew more power because people were praying towards it, people were focusing their thoughts on it, and that deity was gaining power. Okay? And if you sit there and you just look at that concept like that, the same thing can happen actually with negative energy by people channeling, you know, their focus, their thoughts, and sitting there and describing something, in essence, that deity or starts to take shape or demonic soul, depending on whatever you want to consider it to be, it takes a shape, it takes a form. And over time, as people stop and they worship and they praise and they, like I said, dedicate energy to these beings, that's actually how they form. And it's not so much a case of God created them. It's more of a case of humans. Humans gave them personality. And if you look at it with that approach right there, then you start to actually finally have a grasp as to what these entities are. They're pulls of energy. And if you, you know, take a human, while you kill a human, you release that human soul. Once again, it's just energy. And I'm not saying to go out and kill a human, but I'm just saying to look at it from that point of view. A lot of people want to know if a demon has a soul. Well, does an angel have a soul? A lot of people would say yes. Well, guess what? So does the demon, you know, because the original demons that actually came out of the storyline, if you will, when Lucifer or Lucibel went ahead and caused this revolt, they were former angels as well. And that's basically, I'm hoping I kind of answered that question. I'm hoping I didn't offend too many people, but that's basically the way the answer can be started.
Now, I know Lola has a question.
Well, it's okay. Not really a question, but we were talking a couple weeks ago about how the power of almost like mass hysteria, but the power of a group of people to kind of concentrate an energy form, and then it's talked about as a spirit, and then all of a sudden people are seeing this spirit and it's doing, you know, like a ghost. And mm-hmm. So if you take it along those lines just like that, it's kind of like how we humanize our animals. You know, do they really? No. You know, they're not interpreting everything the same way we do, but we give them that power over us to look at them and go, oh, well, they're sad because I'm leaving them, or now I feel guilty because he's mad, you know, that kind of thing. If you do that with an energy, too, I can see how a negative energy would gain, like you said, a personality over
right.
time, because that's what we have, that's our perception we have put on it. That
yeah, exactly. And another thing, too, and this is going to lead into like a little twist, if you will. That concept, if you will, is what it's a personal theory of mine as to why certain people get attacked 9 times out of 10 by a demonic spirit. Why that demonic spirit takes interest on that person, not because they're focusing energy, it's because they've stopped. A lot of the cases that I've been involved in, and I get, you know, called up and 20 questions on left and right, is primarily cases where people had a background to which they were once a Christian. Okay, and there's actually been some Jewish folks that have been affected by this. But they are focusing themselves, they're channeling themselves to God, if you will. And all of a sudden they stop and they say, well, it's just not working for me, and I'm just going to look around. I'm going to try whatever I can. And ironically, there was one case in which a lady actually turned to Islam, of all things. And but a lot of times they end up dabbling in Wicca and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And what happened is they sit there and because they stopped focusing on Christ, they start focusing on all these other concepts. They don't know, they don't understand that when you are doing that, you may be looking toward the positive, but you can still attract the negative. And I know there's a lot of people sit there and say, oh, well, Wiccans aren't evil. They're not. They're actually very positive. And then to a better degree, yes, you are. Yes, you are right. However, though, you also have to remember that modern Wicca is actually, which was created back in 1950, was built upon earlier concepts of witchcraft. And a lot of people like to profess, well, white witch, I'm a white witch. Well, the reality is that a true witch is actually a gray witch, because there's a little bit of good and there's a little bit of bad. There's not, it's a toss up. You don't have the whole Wiccan read of, you know, do as you will and harm none. That rule didn't apply to the earlier concepts of witchcraft. So what happens is these people go to witchcraft. And after a bit of time, they just start saying, you know, actually, I thought this was the answer, and I'm just not finding a completion. So they end up stopping, and they go right back to Christianity. And these are the people that end up getting attacked the most, because what happened was, even though you were trying to do good, you were still actually focusing energy out there. And sometimes you might have had a darker soul, if you will, that was feeding. It was gaining nourishment. It was gaining energy because of your practice. And when you stop, that's the reason why they even tell you that if you perform magic, the only time it backlashes is truly when you stop. That's the reason why, is because once you stop, that demon, if you will, no longer has a feeder bar, so it comes looking for you because it's like, wait a minute, you were giving me energy. What happened? You know what I mean? I mean, I hate to put it in such common sense terms, but that's actually, you know, what's going on.
I don't know. That's pretty deep. I like that analogy. You could take that in a lot of ways and apply it to different things, but
Right, it's not just Wiccans. I have to point that out. Like I said, I have been involved in a case where a lady stopped focusing on Christianity, and she actually turned to Islam, of all things. And you have to remember, every religion, every culture has had these demonic entities, okay? There are demons that date back to Samaritan times, back to Egyptian times, obviously through Muslim. There are a decent amount of Muslim demons. And once you give them the feeder bar, well, you know, remember, it's like it's kind of like a pet. I hate to use that analogy, but you know, it is. It's a pet.
Like you feed a cat outside, it keeps coming.
Right, you know.
I have personal experience with cats coming back to eat. But
well, hey, you know what? It's just like that stray cat, and it will come back to your door and sit there and go, "What's going on? Where's
my
food?"
Yeah. So. And I know with Wicca, it goes back well past the Druids too. And if you want to, you know, keep going on that train of thought, a lot of those gods or things that they prayed to did have good and bad both. There was none that were completely good and none that were completely bad, because for each thing had every yin and yang, I guess, is what I'm getting at. For each good thing, there had to be a bad thing to counterbalance. And so if you're, you know, worshiping one side of something, then the other side is getting its due, too. And I'm not making a lick of sense. Jordan's sitting here looking at me like,
I'm trying to figure you out.
I heard what you said. And no, you are very much on the right exact path, because always remember that in any situation you have two sides to any story. Okay, two sides to any story, the best way of explaining it, okay, is, and I hate to use this as an analogy, but I think it's very strong, is that on 9/11, we as a country, we as a race of human beings, had an horrific event take place in New York City, mm-hmm. and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and Washington, D.C. Absolutely horrific, and in no way, shape, or form should it be blessed as a good thing. However, though, on the other side of the planet, like I said, two sides to every story, on the other side of the planet, there was a group of Muslims that sat there and said, our freedom fighters struck back at the American Satans, okay? And you always have to remember that we can sit there and say, well, these guys attacked us, they're wrong. But at the same time, there's always someone else on the other side going, wait a minute, we hate you people. You people have done bad things to us. You're wrong. We struck back at you.
Yeah, I understand that. We do have a caller.
All right.
Okay. Is this Bill?
Hi, Bill.
Yes, I have three questions for you, if I can ask them. What happened to the old bald guy with the red eyes?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, the old bald guy with the red eyes, like I said, we had gotten the priest, and the priest performed a blessing. And I was very young. I was very untrained. I was very unskilled. I did not really have too much occult knowledge at that time. I believe the best way of explaining what happened was, after he was exorcised, that was it. He went back to his little zone for a hot minute. And demons have a tendency that when they are going, when they're banished, they kind of have to go to another realm. Some people can call that realm that realm hell. Some people refer to it by other names. We believe that this being just basically, you know, had to go away because he had, you have to remember when you're in a spirit and you're getting exercised, if you will, there goes a lot of your energy. However, now there is one thing though. It was only after I was able to go ahead and start researching everything, I believe the actual entity's name was called Sabizos. S-A-B-A-Z-I-O-S.
Are we going to get in trouble, like, somehow with these, like, all these demon names? Like, are our listeners going to get possessed now? Like,
no.
I've heard different theories on that. I'm like, man, he's just naming them off. We're going to have some problems.
The whole concept that if you say the devil's name, well, what is it, three times or something like that, and he's going to appear, if anything, that I think is an old wives' tale.
Like Bloody Mary?
Right. The reality is, unless you're performing certain rituals, certain spells, if you will, for lack of a better term, then you're not actually going to conjure the entity. But just because you say OJ's name doesn't mean he's going to walk inside your room.
Bill, you had another question?
Yeah, that was one of my other questions, that can you summon a demon, you know? Also, how can neutrality be energized?
Now I heard a second. What's the third one?
It said there was neutral energy. Explain that to me, please.
Okay, there is neutral energy, and the best way of explaining neutral energy is
a neutron.
Scientifically, you could say neutron, but if you were to take positive and negative energies and they were to collide, if they were to come together in a form, they would be, neutralized. And it's still an energy source because energy cannot be destroyed. It just exists there. If anything, are sometimes considered to be the focus of neutral energy, living beings, because we have this neutral energy in ourselves, and as we pray, if we pray to something positive, that focus can become positive energy.
Uh-huh.
As we, if we do something negative, it can actually end up being a little bit negative. I hate to use the term karma, but that's one way of explaining it. Even though I am a devout non-believer in karmatic effect, I do believe that there is this karmatic energy that is, like I said, it's neutral, and you can shape it and bend it any way you want. It can go negative, it can go positive. Now, your second question, though, can you summon a demon?
Yes.
Yes, you can. Now, would I recommend it? No, I would not.
Well, I have to go, and thank you, Bill, for your questions.
Okay.
And we always love your calls. See you, Bill.
Yeah.
Kurt, we only have a few minutes left, and I want to know what your thoughts about the Ouija board are. Because you're talking about summoning demons, because it's another thing that on this show we've had a lot of guests say different things. I mean, we even had sisters who wrote a book with every word coming from the Ouija board. You know, so it's...
In my house right now, I probably have about 14 different Ouija boards, or spirit boards, for depending on how you want to call them. And they make great wall decorations, but I don't recommend doing anything. Ouija boards, spirit boards, and home EVP sessions are three dangerous things to do. The reason is because you are calling for a spirit to come forward. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Now, a lot of people sit there and say, "Oh, well, I've got positive charms. They only attract positive spirits." That's fine. Or some people are even mislead themselves and sit there and say, "Oh, well, I did a spell or whatever to only cause positive to come toward me." No, the reality is that just because you did things for a positive doesn't necessarily mean that you cannot attract negative, okay? If you put a charm out or whatever to actually go ahead and attract positive spirits, yeah, your chances are you might actually truly attract more positive than negative, but you're opening the doorway. You're allowing it to be open, and you don't know what's going to come through. Some of the biggest cases have actually started, once again, with a Ouija board. Or a spirit board, or even home EVP sessions.
Now tell me about that, because I mean that's one of the biggest, tools of the paranormal investigator now.
Yeah, home EVP sessions are where you sit there inside your house with an EVP recorder, and you basically talk to the spirits, and you wait for an answer. A lot of people might even use spirit boxes, which is like a, instead of having a playback option, you're hearing it live as it happens. You really have to be careful with these, because when you do them, especially inside your own home, you're opening a doorway, and if you keep doing it repeatedly, that's the key part. You keep doing it repeatedly, eventually the lock on the door kind of gets busted a little bit, and then that's when you end up calling me, and then I have to try to find a way of making it to where that lock can be fixed.
Go ahead.
I don't want to have to do that if I don't have to, so just put the EVP down, put your Ouija board up on the wall and look at it like it's a nice decoration, and go to a neutral site and do it. Go to a city park or something. Let somebody else deal with the negativity if it happens.
But so you're against any kind of use of EVP during an investigation of someone's home?
Well, no. During a paranormal investigation, I won't lie. I do EVP work, and it's only because, you know, you kind of have to at that case. I'm talking about the people that sit there, and I assure you, there are people out there that do this. They'll do home EVP sessions two or three times a day.
Oh, wow.
And they'll do them for months on end. And then they wonder why they're hearing growling coming out of the back room. It's because once you're opening that doorway and you're keeping it open, so to speak, you know, because just because you stop doing the EVP session or even the Ouija board session doesn't necessarily mean that doorway is fully closed after you're done. The longer you keep it open, more of a chance something bad is going to come through.
Yeah, you're making a map and they're just following it to your door. That's
exactly. You've ignited the lighthouse.
It's like, yeah. Okay. It's like a game of Marco Polo.
Yep.
Polo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's the reason why I tell people left and right, Ouija boards are great, but put it up on the wall.
Okay.
Put it up on the wall, or just put it in your closet, and take it out once in a blue moon. Don't sit there and don't do it every day. That's the most dangerous thing I think any human being can do.
Wow. We are out of time. Kurt Kessler, your book, Demonology 101, and your website, Demon 101, where you can follow up with you, follow your blog, and get the book.
And you can even contact me if you are experiencing a problem, and we'll just have to go from there.
That's right. Thank you very much. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for having me.
We'll keep in touch and have you back on.
Oh, awesome.
Awesome. Kurt Kessler, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jordan.
All right, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, that is all the time we have for today. Until next week, don't be afraid, only believe.